Page 129 of The Unfolding is the story of Caitlin James.
There is a urgency and a dependency and a realness to my faith because of the trenches I walked through that I wouldn't wish on anyone. But at the same time, I'm like, there's a level of knowing our God that you don't get to experience unless you are completely broken.
God's story has been unfolding
since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in The Unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. You know, when our story takes a tragic turn, we often imagine that God is far away, ears closed to our pleas for help. But Psalm 34:18 says, "The Lord is near to the brokenhearted, and he saves the crushed in spirit." Caitlin James' heart was crushed with the news that the baby she was carrying would not survive. This was not at all what she had imagined for her life. Caitlin and her husband Michael are successful photographers and coach thousands of others on building their photography business. It's all about capturing those beautiful moments in our life story. This is a hard story, maybe especially so if you've experienced the loss of a child during pregnancy. But it's also a story of hope and finding God faithful to be close to your broken heart.
So before we decided to have kids, we were running my business. And it was, you know, a six-figure business. It was taking us all over the world. We were living the dream as a young couple without kids. And we were just really free, but we knew there was something else for us. We knew that there was, that God had something more in store for us. And I just had this belief in my mind that, like, if I became a mom, everything that I had built in my business would just be gone, that I'd have to sacrifice it all. And the fascinating thing is that it has, like, 6x'd times, like, it's grown exponentially since becoming a mom. And the scaling that we've been able to do. So, you know, my fears about it were all resting in, I'm going to lose everything. I want to hold on to what I've created. Don't take this away from me. And really the Lord was like, I have a part of your life that is going to be the best part of your life. And you just got to let me bring you into it. So I had so much hesitation becoming a mom. Well, we had been trying for about 6 months and I had just, you know, you create all these lies in your head that are built into insecurity. And I just thought, because I've never been that person, that woman who's just envisioned being a mom her whole life, that we just weren't going to be able to have children. I just had convinced myself something was going to be wrong. And so for 6 months of trying, we thought, this, I'm proving myself right. My fear is right. I remember we actually were in Nashville and had a couple, an older couple pray over us. And I just was very honest and say, like, I feel crazy saying this, but 6 months ago I was afraid to be a mom and now I'm desperately trying to get pregnant. And they prayed over us. And sure enough, the Lord started forming Evie, and Evie has been that whole pregnancy. I think God just really changed so much about the unhealthy parts of my life, being a working small business owner. It's fascinating. I had gestational diabetes with her, which is not a huge deal, but it was a complication that put me in a high risk category. Then right at the end of the pregnancy, now granted, I was working nonstop, shooting weddings, building courses, speaking at conferences. I was the epitome of a go-getter. And I had this pain one morning in my hand that was, and I've given birth naturally before. The pain was worse than natural, like unmedicated childbirth. I have never experienced, I was in the tub running it under cold water, screaming. I was in such pain. And we went to all these emergency centers and ERs. And finally they sent me to a hand oncologist. I had a tumor because of pregnancy hormones. I had a tumor in my hand that just exploded and cracked through my knuckle.
Oh,
isn't that horrible? It's fascinating, but as a photographer, the fingers you need your right hand and you need your index finger. That's what hits the shutter. And that's the finger that was being attacked. So I have a scar here because I had to go into emergency surgery, 9 months pregnant with my first baby, lay on the operating table, you know, and stay awake during the surgery. And they had to remove this tumor because if we hadn't removed it, the rate it was growing, I would have to have this part of my hand amputated.
Oh my goodness.
So I've never been a mom before, afraid to be a mom. I get pregnant. We are just so thankful. Diabetes, it's not the end of the world, but then this tumor experience was just absolutely challenging. And it's fascinating, but I could not work or write or type or hold a camera for a month before it happened or 3 months after. And wow. What I found was rest. I saw the Lord take that experience and really show me, like, I'm going to break you down a little bit so that I can show you how to change and shift into this role of motherhood. You need more capacity in your life, in your mind, in your heart. And I learned that by not being able to use my hands for months.
How long did it take you to like surrender to that? I mean, was there a part of you that's like, I'm getting back up and I'm going to finish? Was that a wrestling match with God?
Oh, yes. It was an identity crisis. I was known as being this successful entrepreneur, leader in the industry. And I had all these thoughts of like, I'm going to get behind. I'm going to lose my spot. It's like I'm pushing this boulder up a hill. And if I stop, I'm going to lose everything if I can't keep performing. And honestly, the scariness of, I mean, when I was in the operating room, the surgeon left with the tumor in a little jar and went upstairs to pathology. And he said, I'll be back after I go look at this. And I'm like, he's about to come back and tell me whether or not I have cancer. Like, this is crazy. And turns out it was completely dead. And it was not cancer. But I think the severity of the situation really shocked me out of somewhat of my reality and the way it had always been. And I just started realizing there's more to life than this rat race that I've put myself in. And my husband and I do transformational coaching. We've done it for years, 6 years now. And something that my coach was challenging me in that season was to consider that I actually liked the rat race. You know, I would say it's all on me. Like I've got to perform. It's, you know, there's so much on me. And she's like, you are choosing that. And you actually benefit from that. You benefit by getting a lot of sympathy. You benefit from not having to show up in other areas of your life. If you keep saying and putting yourself in situations where you are an overachiever, an overdoer, workaholic, you're going to have a lot of areas of resentment creep in. And so I was already working through that with a coach. And then when this happened, it was just like this light bulb moment where I realized, oh my gosh, I think the Lord needed me to experience this, because even coaching wasn't enough for me to snap out of the mindset that I'd been in for years.
And how cool of that coach to be able to choose to speak that kind of hard truth to you. But thank goodness for somebody like that.
Yes. I mean, this is going to make me sound crazy, but she had actually told me, Caitlin, if you are unwilling to see beyond your current reality and that something else could be possible for you, I don't know if we can work together anymore.
Whoa.
She's like, she basically said, you have so much potential, but you are so stuck in how you view life and how life occurs. I can't do more to break through to you. It's got to be your decision. And that woke me up. So that with my tumor, it all, I feel like the Lord used all of it to prepare me to be a mother. And really what's fascinating is the hard work that I had to do between the tumor and first pregnancy and all the challenges. It really, looking back, it was preparing us for an even bigger storm that was to come. And we didn't know that at the time, but we, as a married couple, we were prepared to handle the next season, which was actually so much harder than this season that I'm talking about now. Well, you know, people say when your baby's on your chest for the first time, it's just, everything's different. And some people say that's not true. You know, that's a moment that not everyone has. Well, it was very true for me. I can still remember like feeling her arms and her hair and being like, oh my gosh, like she's here. I am a mom. And I shocked myself at how much I loved being a mom. And you know, what else was possible for me? I only saw myself good at being good at business. I never saw myself being good at being a mom or enjoying it. And so, yeah, I battled with how to balance the two. How do I have two passions now? Passion for business, passion for my children or my firstborn. And I worked through that for, you know, several months postpartum. It was a very weepy, tear-filled season of trying to figure out who am I. But I realized that if I could be that challenged from being like, I don't know if I'm called to be a mom, if I can do this too. Oh my gosh, I love this little human. Then what else is possible for me? Mm-hmm. You know, I was slipping back into this black or white, no in between mindset and never leaving any room for possibility there. So it was a challenging first, like 6 months of being a mom, having a new baby, but I did, I loved it. I loved all of it.
And did you love it so much that you thought you might want to do it again?
Yes. We definitely wanted to have more kids. We just thought, you know, kind of like the 2-year time frame. We thought that would be a good spaced window. And because it took us a while to have Evie, we just weren't even thinking about if we could potentially get pregnant again, but then we did, and we didn't know. It was a surprise.
Really?
Evie was only 8 months old. And here I am pregnant again after, I mean, Evie was 9 pounds, 10 ounces. She was a huge baby. And here we are. I found out we're pregnant. And that was, again, not part of the plan, but it was God's plan. We were excited. We were shocked. And we just praised the Lord for like this new life that we had no idea that this was going to happen. So, which is the kind of the beginning of the next season of our life.
Now that you've embraced motherhood and now you have a second child on the way, you kind of write in your head a story, like what you think that's going to look like.
Yes.
When did you first realize that the story might not go according to that plan?
We got used to the idea of, oh, we're going to have children so close together. You know, we were so excited, and we went to our 20-week ultrasound and had zero thought because we had never experienced it before. We had had nothing but, I mean, besides the hand tumor, we had had nothing but good OBGYN appointments. Like, you know, our ultrasounds look great. So we went into the 20-week ultrasound. We brought Evie. She was, let's see, like a year. Right. Yes. It was actually right before her first birthday. And we took her in so she could see her sibling and find out if it was a boy or girl on the screen. And we had what seemed normal. But then the ultrasound tech left and she was gone for 45 minutes. And I remember saying to Michael, he was on the left-hand side of the bed. I looked at him and said, "You don't think something's wrong, do you?" And he's like, "No, Caitlin, stop worrying." But there was very much something wrong. The ultrasound tech came back in and introduced me to Dr. Troyer. She was the high risk specialist. And she sat down, put her hand on my knee. And I knew when she put her hand on my knee that something was really not good. And she said, "You know, this sweet baby has a lot of abnormalities. So I'm going to walk you through those and then we're going to take next steps." And she started with his head, which was not shaped normally, and went all the way down through his arms and legs that were shorter than normal, and then showed me his stomach. Wait, at the time we didn't know if it was a boy, but showed the stomach and that it, you know, he had high drops, which is when a baby's body takes on water and just swells, and something was not right. And so I don't think she said in the moment that he was incompatible with life, but she said that this is extremely serious. And I do not know if this baby will be able to survive. We called my mom. She came and picked up Evie. And I remember Michael saying, "It's bad. It's really bad. You need to come get Evie. We're still meeting with the doctor."
When Dr. Troyer came in and began to go through, you know, here's what we're dealing with. Do you remember what you felt or thought or prayed, or do you remember what was going on in your mind?
Yes, I remember saying, "Oh my gosh, this is happening to us. Like, this is what it feels like." When you say, "Oh, I can't imagine that." You look at other people's stories. I remember being like, "This is what it feels like. It's happening to us right now." I remember there was a mom from college. I met this girl in college. She got married, became a mom, and carried a baby that wasn't going to survive to term and delivered that baby. And I remember saying to Michael, my husband, "I could never do that. Never could do that." And I remember thinking about her and being like, I'm that girl. Mm-hmm. Like, I also remember Michael saying very practically, "You know, we have been very successful in business. We're so grateful for that." He's like, we can do this, whether it is you know, a child with special needs, or whether it is a loss, like we have the resources, like we can do this. Like maybe like we will survive this. But that, you know, it's a very different mindset being the one carrying the baby. I remember I almost got physically sick. Almost, I had to go to the sink on the other side of the room. I was just crying so hard. I almost threw up. And I remember just being distraught, you know. I didn't really have a huge sense of this is going to turn around, but there was a little piece of me that thought maybe they're all wrong. Maybe this is just a bad angle of his head. Maybe this is not really as serious as we thought. But the majority of the thought was, this is really, really bad. and I can get a sense from everyone, this is rare and it's very serious. All those things flooding through our minds. Yeah. We left that ultrasound room and immediately the next day went to a genetic counselor. That's just a part of the process, which was very eye-opening to me. I was so naive. I didn't even know what a genetic counselor meeting was, but it was basically giving me an option to end it. And I just remember sitting there being like, oh, that's what we're taught. That's what this meeting is about ending this pregnancy. And that, you know, I technically can, because it is, you know, I have this choice. And I thought to myself, oh no, we're going to care. I felt very strongly that we were going to carry this baby until the Lord took him. But we were told that that would take maybe a week to a week and a half. That's how severe his situation was. All of the complications were pretty elevated. And I remember praying so specifically, Lord, show us the direction we're going and give us a peace. Because for about a week and a half, we didn't know if we were preparing ourselves to have a severely disabled child with so many struggles in life, or if we were preparing to lose a child. We just didn't know. And that's a very, it is grief no matter which way you look at it. And I needed to know what I'm preparing for. And so the next week when we went in to look at him again, he had declined rapidly. And it was very clear to everyone that he would not survive. This was not turning around. This wasn't just a weird week. And, you know, we did an amnio, which basically is drawing skin cells from the fluid floating around in the womb with a large needle, and tested it, and it came back positive for Down syndrome. And so that was helpful for us to understand, you know, what is happening with our baby? Why is, you know, and he had a heart defect that is common for children with Down syndrome. And that was causing swelling. That was causing a lot of things. And so we began a journey then that we thought would be, you know, one more week and then he would probably be gone. But that is not what happened.
Reality was turning out to be very different from the story that Caitlin had imagined for her life. Even the prognosis for baby James was far different than the actual road ahead. Part two of Caitlin's story is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. So Habib, if you were to boil down leadership principles to maybe one or two things that you remind yourself each morning, like a good rule of thumb, what would those be?
Well, there are many thoughts that come to mind, but I'm going to try to boil them into two or three maybe. I always try to remind myself that I'm ambassador for God, no matter what I'm doing, whether it's at work, whether it's with my family, whether it's my children, my spouse, my friends, everybody. I am an ambassador for God. And if I mess up, it's going to make God look bad. So I have to keep trying hard. Number two, it doesn't matter how high I come up in an organization, I need to have humility. Jesus was humble. He was the Son of God, yet he humbled himself. The Bible says he humbled himself and died on the cross for us. If Jesus was humble, I better be humble. And I better love God and love people. So if I just remember these things, there's many other principles, but if I remember these things, it keeps me centered. That's a good word, important. I want to stay centered and rooted so that I don't get a big head. I don't get haughty. I don't go off on the deep end. It's not really about me. It's about the people watching, and am I a good role model for them? That's what good leaders should be.
If you could use resources that help keep you centered and rooted in those kind of good things, check out Habib's website. It's HabibHabib.com. And now part two of Caitlin James' story.
we were told every week, you know, this little guy is so strong. Like, can't believe he is still with us. And so after we got past like the 2 week mark post, you know, I was 22 weeks then, it was really kind of like an every week we were told we're getting closer. But yeah, he just kept going. And I had this very interesting dynamic going on in my heart and in my mind where I never wanted to pray for my child to die, but I also didn't want him to suffer and I didn't want to suffer, but also telling the Lord, like, we had this phrase, we committed to loving him while we had him. We were going to love him while we have him and try to cherish him. But that is very painful to let your heart, let your walls down and let yourself love and name and talk to and take pictures of your belly, knowing what is going to come. It seems like almost a little bit like torture, but really that was the greatest decision that God allowed us to come to as a couple. I mean, it changed everything about the way that we showed up in this entire traumatic season of our life. And so the longer he lived, the more we had the opportunity to love him. It was like an hourly decision. Sometimes I would have an hour where I was done. I was mad at God. I was so frustrated. Take it away, right? And then the next hour I'd be holding my belly and talking to my baby. Mm-hmm. And oh, it was a mental game. I mean, I felt exhausted every day, not even at the beginning from physical exhaustion. It was a mental exhaustion like I've never experienced. And so he continued to live. And halfway through this journey, he flipped breech. And that is significant for a lot of different reasons, which I can explain as we get a little closer to the end. But when it comes to why he survived so long, I truly believe, and once he was born, we saw this, he only had to keep his heart and his lungs and his brain alive, his blood and the oxygen, you know, he only had to pump enough to keep, because he was upright, you know. So I think it contributed greatly to how he survived so long, because when he flipped breech, he just really, the effort for his little body to keep going was cut in half. And so he flipped and his face, and this kind of gets into more of the end of the story, but God weaved in so many gifts from him flipping breech to him living as long as he did. He ended up living until I was 31 weeks. Yeah. Long time. So 3 months. I thought I'd have 2 weeks of this, but it was 3 months of getting out of bed, wondering if he's still there. We actually bought a Doppler, an at-home Doppler, which allowed me to, every time I use the bathroom, which as a pregnant woman is very often, I would check his heartbeat to see if he was still with us. And I needed that because it helped me celebrate him. Mm-hmm. Instead of walking around appointment to appointment, he stopped moving. I couldn't feel him moving very much. And so I didn't know if he was still there. And I didn't want to wait until an ultrasound to figure out when he passed away. So we bought the Doppler, and it was actually a gift. We let Evie listen to his heartbeat. Mm-hmm. We as a family would listen to him. It was just another opportunity to love this child that we knew we would never bring home to our living room in a car carrier. So yeah, there's so many things. I could talk about him for hours, because when you don't have a child that's here, you, at least for me, I love talking about his story because this is all I have of him.
Right. It's a chance to treasure all of those moments mm-hmm. along the way. Yes. You talked about at times feeling mad at God, that your story's not going at all how you pictured or planned. Can you talk about, in terms of your relationship with God and your faith, mm-hmm. if you can describe maybe that roller coaster a bit?
Yes. What's fascinating to look at my experience with my faith and my relationship with the Lord in comparison to some other people in my family. I come from a solid background of faith. I've been a believer since I was 6 years old. My dad has been a pastor for my entire life, and my parents love the Lord. But it was fascinating, my mom watching me go through this, my mother like just struggled with anger, struggled with doubt, struggled with the Lord. And I had situational anger, mostly towards the fact that I was sharing our story publicly. I have a large Instagram following, and I could see God using it. I mean, we gained 30,000 followers when I was pregnant with James in 3 months. And I think people were just maybe nosy a little, but mostly desperate for some hope. Like to watch someone who has such faith go through the trenches of loss and to not know when this baby was going to die. It's like we were bringing people along on the journey. And I felt so called to that. I had friends tell me, you don't need to share this. You don't need to share this. And I'm like, I just feel like I'm supposed to. And God did amazing things through that. But I had moments where my anger towards God would show up in, is this why you're doing this to me? Because I have an Instagram following. Well, Lord, take away the business, take away the following, take away all of it and give me my child back. Is that why you're doing this to me? In my lowest moments with the Lord, that was what I came back to. Like, how cruel are you, Lord, to give me a following, give me this platform just to take a child from me. So I have this interesting story for people to follow. But once I would recover from the pit and I'd be in a new, maybe an hour later, even I'd recognize this is a broken world, right? I was never promised for this baby to be healthy. I'm not promised that something won't happen to my daughter today at preschool. I went back and forth from being so hurt to also trusting that the Lord was using our story and that our pain was not purposeless. And the more that I would share and give insight into this process of loving a child that's dying, oh, I can't tell you how many people reached out. I mean, I had 60-year-old, 70-year-old women from our church leave me notes. They wouldn't talk to me about it because that's not their generational thing. Like they don't talk about pain like this or trauma like this, but they would write me notes and say, I never even considered that I have a baby in heaven until following your story. Or I never even thought that I should name the little girl that I lost at 24 weeks back in the 80s. It's just fascinating what God did. And then young moms like me in similar situations saying, my friend just sent me your Instagram handle and I've been following, like I'm in the same situation and I don't know how to get through the days. So I just saw God take the pain and use this child's life. You know, this unborn baby was changing people's lives. And I just felt like I needed to be obedient in sharing. It wasn't roses. It's not like I'm sharing these Instagram posts that like, I'm really doing it, guys. It was painful. These were not happy posts. But the Lord, I felt his presence with me during this season, carrying a dying child, that I almost look on other people with a little bit of sadness that they won't be able to experience the Lord that way. Like there is a urgency and a dependency and a realness to my faith because of the trenches I walked through that I wouldn't wish on anyone. But at the same time, I'm like, there's a level of knowing our God that you don't get to experience unless you are completely broken. And that's the part of this that's a privilege.
You know, you talked about that influx of followers on Instagram. I know people were praying for you. I'm just curious if there are things that you directly connect to having, you know, those masses of people praying for you. Did you see the impact of that?
That's a great question. I actually don't know if I've ever been asked that question. So that's a great thing to consider. I think I attribute the prayers, honestly, and this works well sharing the end of the story, but the day he was born, and he actually died during delivery. I didn't get the story that I wanted. I wanted it to all happen outside of my control, but that's not what happened. And it was so beautiful. It was my best friend was there. She photographed his birth and she said the veil was thin that day. Like heaven was so close to that room. It was powerful. And I look back on that day and, it was sad. And there were some traumatic moments but it was heavenly. Like it was such a beautiful celebration of his life. And I don't think I would have experienced that without the people that had been lifting us up for months, the people that we knew personally praying for us in that moment. I just felt it so clearly then. And I think, you know, there were some hard things about sharing it publicly. You know, there were some people that would DM me and say, like, God told me in a dream that he's going to be healed That's not what you say to someone, you know, walking through this, because that's not what God told me. I never, ever imagined baby James being healed. And so I just felt very confident early on that the Lord was preparing us for a massive loss. But overall, sharing and having people pray for us, there were some people that would message me and say, I haven't prayed in years, and I feel called to pray for you. And I don't know what that means about me and my faith, or, you know, if God's seeking me out or not, but I just wanted to let you know that something, God's doing something with this child's life. And there's, as a mother who wants to see their children grow up and have purpose in their life, I have seen more purpose in a 5-pound, 4-ounce baby that never took a breath than I have ever seen, you know, in any other normal person's grown adult's life. So it was such a gift to have people come along in the story with us.
How did the delivery time get determined? What, you know, how did you make that decision?
Oh, that's a great question. So when you have a baby with severe high drops, something that can be a risk to the mother is something called mirror syndrome. And it's where the mother's body mirrors what's happening to the baby. And it's kind of a form of preeclampsia. So the high blood pressure, swelling. I actually never got to a place where I would have been diagnosed with mirror syndrome, but this had gone on for 3 months. And my family says, I don't remember this, but my family says, you got to a place at week 30 that we were worried about you. Mentally, we were worried about you. There was a shift that happened. You were at the end of your rope. And the doctor could tell that. It was nothing like suicidal thoughts or anything like that, but it was just, I feel like I'm losing my mind. I feel like, you know, we were also getting close to my husband's birthday, and I really just hyper laser focused on, I don't want him to die on Michael's birthday. All these things. I was also very laser focused on, I don't want to determine the day that he dies. I want him to just die and then I get induced. But that was not happening. I did have some swelling. My blood pressure was a little elevated, but it wasn't enough to induce me. But with the mental component, the doctor said, I think we should consider induction. And because I was 31 weeks, this is what really did not sit well with me. We had to get an ethics committee at the hospital to vote on whether or not I could ethically induce labor. Everyone knew that this baby was not going to survive, but it kind of speaks to the complication of even what our world is working through right now. But they, of course, said yes. You know, it wasn't this big debate. It was a very logical decision. And it's fascinating. I went in to be induced. I delivered him breech, which was a very interesting experience, you know, feet first. And his heart rate dropped. We have a recording of it. It's just started slowing down. The closer to pushing, you know, it just could not keep up. And so he was born and he moved twice in my arms and then he was gone. And it was this very peaceful birth experience. You know, I'm a photographer. Photos mean everything to me. And the Lord was so good to me. He, you know, if a baby passes away, and I know this is pretty, could be pretty triggering to think through, but if a baby passes away and you don't know it for even just 24 hours, their body starts to change and it can be hard to look at. So here I was fighting for, no, this is not what I wanted. And yet the Lord, I feel like he was saying, just trust me. Like, I know what you really want. And what you really want is that you want pictures with this baby and you want pictures of your daughter meeting this baby and your family holding this baby. And what he gave me in the story and the timeline of James's life was he passed away during delivery, which means he looked just like a sleeping baby. I got the pictures that I dreamed of with this child. And when you have a baby with severe high drops, I mean, he was so swollen. So the doctors warned us, because he was so hydropic, to prepare ourselves to be viewing a baby that doesn't look like a baby. The swelling is so severe, you probably won't be able to make out his facial features. You won't be able to tell where his eyes are or his nose. He came out because he flipped breech. His whole face was pressed against the placenta and all that fluid was pushed away from his face. So we saw his little nose, his eyes, his lips, which looked like his sister's. Oh, it was the greatest gift. And we have on a video recording, as soon as he was born, Michael sobbing and saying, "Caitlin, you can see his face." And that was like the Lord, that was the Lord's gift to me. You know, as soon as he was born, I developed mirror syndrome as soon as he came out. And I mean, skyrocketing. It's like my body was released of this bad situation and it freaked out. I mean, my blood pressure was stroke level. I didn't even feel it. The adrenaline of the baby, everyone meeting him before his body changed. And it was, we were rushing to get all these pictures done. And the nurse basically said to my family, "You have to leave. This is serious." I had to go on magnesium. And she looked at me and she said, "If you had come in just one day later, it would have been emergency C-section and you would have been in, you know, severe danger." And so what a gift that that was not my story, that I had this birth experience that I wanted, that my family met this child, all these things I didn't even know that I needed. And the Lord did. We wrote a birth plan for him, which we have shared with hundreds of families. We basically birth plans for healthy babies. It's like how you want it to go, you know, things that preferences you would like. And it seems awful to create a birth plan for a baby that's not going to survive, but it was the greatest gift because it was like a way to honor his life. And the nurses followed it to a T. The nurses wept over it. They're like, "We've never seen a family treat a dying baby like the child that it is." So yeah, that his birthday was one of the saddest days of our life, but it's also such a joyful, like, release of, we survived this. We survived. We were on the other side.
You said something I thought was interesting. You were saying, you know, that was not my story. God knew what you needed in terms of just talking about the delivery experience and that. So then maybe pan back and think back, you know, when you first found out about what the issues were and thinking, wait, this is not the story. You know, this is not how I thought my story was going to go. I'm just curious about that phrase, God knew what I needed. As you look back over this experience, it's obviously not something you would have chosen, but you referred to something, an intimacy with God that you've experienced as a result of it. That's kind of hard for people to wrap their mind around. Can you kind of flesh that out?
Yes. Well, I don't know if I'd ever say that I'm trying to make sense of why this happened to us, but it's fascinating. I don't think I ever doubted that God was real or that he was good during all of this. I had moments of being angry with him, but I never doubted that my faith was real. And I've even thought recently, like, I've had more doubts about faith stuff 4 years removed from this experience. Why did I not doubt him when this horrible thing was happening to me? I just feel like he truly did carry us. And sometimes I thought, is this a result of trauma? And was I just believing that he was who he says he was, that he was good, that this was all real? Because I was in survival mode to the extreme. And I look back and I'm like, no, it wasn't that. It wasn't just a repercussion of pain or trauma. This was the Lord showing me who he was and the grace and the peace he could offer in life's worst situations. And I've always heard about that. I've always heard people talk and reference that. But I got to live it and I would never choose this. Oh gosh, I would never choose it, but I am 4 years out and I can see that, like, this wasn't just this awful thing that happened to me. This wasn't just this sad story. I've seen him use it and I've seen him change our entire family. I've seen him, my entire family does transformational coaching now, and it stemmed from this season, losing this baby in our family. And that coaching experience has led to, oh gosh, our relationships are just at this beautiful place. I've gotten to minister to moms. I've gotten to minister to businesswomen. The Lord just keeps sending us stories of how his life, even though he'd lived he's 4 years past since this happened. And I just see God's purpose all over it. Now, I just recently talked to a client who is going through a horrible, horribly traumatic situation, with her family. And, you know, I said to her, like, you know, life did not go how I expected as well. And I'm removed from it now. And I can see there's so much more to it than just pain. And she said to me, she goes, I am not there yet. And I said, you don't have to be. I wasn't there. There were some days just cried in bed, couldn't get out of bed. So it was not this like, oh, I just trusted the Lord with it all. It was a struggle, an hourly, daily, weekly struggle. But there was this underlying sense that I'm not going through all of this for no reason. I can't be. Like, this can't just be this sad part of my life. But I think because I chose to love the baby and cherish James when I had him, that gave me a perspective shift that I desperately needed.
Caitlin says when she looks back over her story, one of the biggest changes that she sees in herself is that she's learned to lean into the pain. Her initial instinct was to guard her heart, to just simply get through this hard situation. But because of God's leading to lean in, love with all her heart, cherish the time they had, instead of making it a more heartbreaking experience, she says she has more joy, more peace, more confidence that their story unfolded just as God planned. It confirms to her that she can trust God no matter what. Hey, if you'd like to learn more about Caitlin, check out her blog, Instagram, a YouTube channel, and more at CaitlinJames.com. Thanks so much to Caitlin for sharing her story. Hey, thanks for listening today. This past week, The Unfolding crossed over 1.5 million downloads. Isn't that crazy? Thank you for sharing episodes, rating, and reviewing in your favorite podcast player. It's all thanks to you. And to the awesome Unfolding team, Elena Nowlin, Danielle Perez. Special thanks to Jen Brisky and the amazing Jason Rackow, our producer. And of course, we're so grateful for our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. Find out how to unleash the full power of your leadership potential at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page of The Unfolding.